Thank you, Joanne.
Okay, Lynn Alcoholic.
Hey, Lynn.
Anybody has their birthday in March, we're having a birthday bash on the 31st. There's a flyer up there. And it's open to everyone at Potluck, so if you're interested, see me or the flyer at the end of the meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you. We celebrate milestones at this meeting for 365 days of continuous sobriety. Please stand if you have recently celebrated an AA birthday. Tell us your name and the number of years you are celebrating.
Lynn.
Alcoholic. Hey, March 12th, 29 years.
Yay. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Okay, and now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for the evening. Let's welcome just kidding. Shelly M. from Santa Maria.
Shelly Alcoholic. I want to thank Lynn for the call to ask me to come out and speak. And I have a sobriety date, and it's December 16th, 2012. So, what it was like. Well, you know, when I got asked to speak, you know, I tried not to think about this, but of course, you know, when it comes down to the hour of, you're like, But, you know, it took a minute to think about what it was like, you know, because it hasn't been like that for a while now, and I'm grateful for that. You know, growing up, I grew up in a family with both parents present, you know. I was a straight-A student in school, and you know, I was super social. That was the only complaint the teachers had, you know, was, you know, the talking too much in class. And other than that, you know, I was, a good student. And somewhere around the sixth grade, when you start to venture out of your home and you go to the mall with your friends and the skating rink, you know, and do all those things that we used to do back in the day, And I started to just get defiant, you know. I just wanted to go. I wanted to be gone all the time. I don't know why that was, you know, because life at home was good, you know. Like I said, I had both parents in the home. There wasn't a lot of fighting. There wasn't fighting going on or partying. So I, you know, was just a typical blue-collar family. And I have a younger brother, and he's 6 years younger than me. And for whatever reason, once I got out there in the streets, something, you know, alcohol came in the scene, you know, and I loved it, you know, I loved it. And I would just, and very early on, I could drink as much as the guys could drink, you know, so naturally, most of my friends, you know, for years, they were guys, you know, because I'm drinking like the boys, you know, and, you know, I get into junior high, and drugs are coming in, you know, and I'm hanging out with whoever's doing that, you know, I'm not playing softball anymore, I'm getting suspended from school, I'm fighting, you know, I'm bullying people, and, you know, my mom's just like, just have her walk home, you know, she's tired of getting the call, she can't keep leaving work, you know, and so that goes on, and by eighth grade, you know, I went from a straight-A student to failing every class. You know, wasn't allowed at any of the basketball games or dances or any of that. And pretty much my file sat on the vice principal's desk the year round. So it was just, I just gravitated towards whoever was running free, you know, and I don't know what that was about. You know, maybe it was hormones, you know, as a kid. I don't know. But I didn't end up graduating on stage from eighth grade, and nor did I enter into a high school. So I basically, I started just partying all the time. I'm drinking all the time. Anytime I could get a little bit of money and get out of the house, I'm drinking. I'm not coming home. I'm running away. And about when I was 13, I ran away to L.A. And I turned 14 down there. I had been gone for about a month. And, you know, my parents are frantically searching for me. They're calling the, Lakewood Sheriff Department. You know, they're coming and knocking down doors. You know, the people that I'm there with, you know, my girlfriend that lived here moved down. All her family was down there. And they're like, you got to go. You need to go home. You know, now the cops are, you know, the heat's on, you know, they're like, you got to go home. So they had a funeral to go to in Hanford, and they send me home with the alcoholic uncle, you know, and he's wasted, you know, at the end of the funeral. And I'm 14 years old, you know, and didn't know how to drive. And he says, he's got this nice 70s, you know, Corvette. And he says, you know how to drive a stick? I said, no. And he said, well, you're going to learn tonight. And I said, okay. So there I was on that, what is that, road coming back from Paso to Hanford, you know, on that two lane. And I didn't even know. I was driving on the wrong side of the road, and I don't know why, but I got over, and all of a sudden a car's coming this way, and I'm like, oh, that's what that other lane's for, you know. Like, seriously, I'm young, you know. I'm a kid, you know. And so we made it to town, you know, and my parents, you know, they, you know, were just happy that I was safe and home, you know. And I remember my mother's parents, you know, they lived back in Florida, and, you know, God, they were, you know, I was really close with them, you know. And then when they called for my birthday that year, wasn't around, you know, and they were like, what happened? Well, quickly after that, it was just... it was a lot of running, a lot of partying, you know, a lot of cocaine, a lot of acid. Probably by the time I was 16, I'd probably tried every drug there was out there. And I'm hanging out with, you know, the people that are partying like me, you know. They're not living at home, you know. I'm jumping out the window. My mom's nailing the window shut. You know, I mean, she's chasing me down at a party, and an hour later, I'm gone. And so this went on for some time, and then, you know, you guys remember that we used to have the cruise out here on Broadway, you know, and somehow I must have did. I think I got into a continuation school. I think I went to El Puente for a while, and I was doing good. Got myself a little part-time job at Burger King. You know, my mom bought me a Volkswagen, you know, and it had, you know, rims, and I was, you know, I was rolling, you know. I just had made enough money at Burger King, put gas in that car, and it was on, you know. And you know, everybody else, you know, whatever, wherever the party was, that's where I was. And it was, you know, that was keg parties back in the day, you know. We're throwing that keg in the back of the VW, you know. We're freaking, you know, jamming all over town, thinking we're all cool. And we were cool. Shit, we were cool back then. You know, that was you know, mini truck days, you know. And so then I meet my first Mr. Wonderful, you know, and he's got a car club, and you know, he's a big cocaine dealer, and he says, I got us a place. And I said, oh, great, you know, I'm gone, you know. So there I was off and running, you know, and I'm 16 years old, and I left home, you know. I moved out. I said, I'm out of here. And my mom was like, she, you know, that by then she'd had it, you know. She'd been running like hell to try to chase me down. And so she emancipated me when I moved out at 16. So she wouldn't be financially responsible. And so that went on for a while, you know. And you know, I thought I'd arrived, you know. That was, everybody was coming to my house, you know, the party, you know, all the, you know, what do you say, Luke? The honeys and the monies, you know, was on, you know, and so that was, you know, everything was still good, you know, everything was still good at that time, you know, aside from a, you know, stuffed up nose, you know, from all that cocaine the night before, you know, it was all right. And then it's getting abusive, physically abusive, you know, this relationship. And I'm like, I gotta go, you know, I gotta go. So I went back down to LA and, I moved down with my girlfriend. By now she's had a baby and she's living with her boyfriend. And so she says, you know, come on down. I said, all right. And I took off and I moved down there for a while and I got my first, real job after that. You know, I think I was, I was 19 and, I started working at the Sizzler or something. And, I stayed down there for a little while and then I was back and forth. I came back to Santa Maria. It all starts becoming a blur, you know, then, you know, not in contact with any of the people that I went to school with. You know, my friends are changing constantly. Men I'm dating are 7 years older than me. And, you know, so yeah, they're buying booze. You know, I'm 16 years old and he's, you know, 22, you know, 23 years old. And so I kind of bounce back and forth. I'd be partying over here and then I'd say, man, you guys are going to bed? Fuck, it's only like 2 o'clock, you know? So I'd freaking get in the car and jam down to LA, you know, because I knew they were partying all night long, you know, it didn't stop down there. And so, so I did that a few times and then I said, I went down there. I went back to LA and this time we're just bouncing all over the place. You know, my girlfriend's, you know, she's not with her baby's dad, you know, we're just going from place to place to place. Her mom's a bartender, you know, we're closing down the bar, we're staying after, you know, I'm just, saturated in alcohol all the time. And nothing's phasing me. I'm not calling home. I'm not thinking about my little brother at home. I'm not thinking about my parents or my grandparents and what they're thinking. None of that. All that is, it's back burner. It's not there. It's not in my mind. And then, you know, then we got crystal meth comes on the scene. And, well, you know, it's a lot different down there in L.A. than it is up here, the small town. And, everything started rolling really fast, really hard, and I was numb. I was just numb, you know. My spirit was gone. You know, I had this. I'd worked on that toughness, that armor for so long. You know, it was just like, you know, I was the bully. You know, it's like beating people up, fighting all the time, the drugs, the alcohol. You know, I'm like, I don't know anything else. You know, I've only had a couple little part-time jobs for a few months, you know, and this is all I know, you know, and all I know is that those people, the family down there in LA, they were my family, you know, that was my family, and they all partied together, and so that was a normal thing, you know, so, you know, people are going to jail and getting DUIs and getting shot and stabbed and, you know, that was life. That was life over there with us. And so we got an apartment in Bellflower and down on Cornuda. And it's funny, when I came home, you know, a few years later, you know, that the street that I lived on and the street behind us, it was on that show, Cops, you know. And so that tells you, you know, what kind of lifestyle, you know, I'm living, you know. Then I start drifting away from them, too, because, you know, they're becoming too small. They're becoming peons, too. You know, I'm rolling too hard and too fast. And I'm getting in to situations and places that this small town girl, sober, would have never been at. And I'm alone all the time, you know, I'm alone all the time. And, you know, so, but that connection, you know, he's pumping me up, you know, I was, you know, yeah, you're the man, you know. And so anyways, you know, before, for whatever reason, yeah, that was just a really trippy time. I just can't even believe that the person that I was and that the way things were going down there, you know, and you know, you're packing a gun and doing all these things that just was out of my league, really. And but you're so numb and you're so hardened to all that stuff. It really didn't faze me, you know. I came home. I think I moved in with somebody. The kid wrecked my car, you know. I come home and I'm, you know, about a buck 10, and my brother opens the door and he's like, "Who are you?" And I was like, get out of my way, you know, just get out of my way, you know, just whatever, I'm just here for Thanksgiving or whatever. I don't even think I ate Thanksgiving that year, you know. It was like, and the next day my mom bought me a Cutlass and sent me on the road, sent me packing, you know. So it's like, see ya. All right. So then about a couple months later, first time I got arrested. And you know, you're running with these people, you know, and they think they're all hard and everything. And then when we go to get busted, you know, oh yeah, take the stuff, you know. So I'm the one, you know, carrying the stuff, you know, and I get busted and I go to jail and I first time ever getting in trouble, you know, with the law. And I'm 21 years old and I'm in Sybil Brand downtown LA jail. And when I come to there, you know, it takes me, I don't know, 3 days to get through processing or whatever. And I'm like, fuck, what is happening? What happened to my life? Who am I, you know? That was the first time I think that I kind of woke up and I'm like, it was like a scene from a movie, you know? And we go in the chow line and they lock the doors. They lock you in the stairwell, and you know, that's when everything starts jumping off and I'm like, whoa, I need to get out of here, you know. So I'm calling home, you know, crying, you know, post the bail, where's it at, you know. And I don't know if it, you know, definitely God wasn't in the picture, you know, but at some point in that stay, I think I was there about 5 days, and that was, you know, that was enough. But I hit the ground running when I got out. I said, shit, they gave me my $1,200 I had in my pocket when I got out. I said, it's on, you know, let's go, you know, that was it. I saw the wad of money, and that's all it took to get me spinning again. And so, so then, you know, it's just going on and on like that, and everything's going really fast, and I meet this guy. He's, you know, we had some mutual friends come down to LA and we're partying and get introduced to this guy. I start talking to him for a little while and then I was like, oh yeah, no, you gotta go, you're too clingy, whatever. And then I end up pregnant. My friend, she has like 4 kids, you know, down there, and she's like, you're pregnant. And I'm like, no, you know, so I rack out some fat ones, you know, and she said, all right. And took the test, and sure as shit. And for whatever reason, at that moment, I dropped everything. I just picked up and I left. And I came back home. And my parents, you know, welcomed me once again. You know, they welcomed me in. And I have my son, you know. And I think that this is it. You know, this was a God shot. You know, I'm starting, I stayed sober through my pregnancy. Except for a little pot, you know, at the end, you know, third trimester, you're good, you know. And then I have my son and things are going good for a little while. And then I'm in a horrible, dysfunctional relationship, not with the dad. And of course, you know, everybody that I associate with, they're still rolling. Their world didn't stop. They didn't just have a baby, you know, I did. You know, so I didn't have anybody. I didn't have any other connections besides my parents, who I became very defiant with and wasn't close to. They were like, I'd talk and they'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, they didn't understand my language at all, you know. And that's a messed up feeling, to be sober with a brand new baby and your parents don't understand what you're freaking saying, you know. And I can remember just going, that's it, you know. So I just, there I was. I just kind of got rid of that stuff. I kind of partied out with what I had left going on, and I just knew that all that stuff had to go, because something, you know, I'm not a psychopath, you know, something inside me, I had some moral threads left in me, and I knew that kid deserved a better life. So my attitude, though, was, you know, I'm going to raise this kid and then I'm out of here. I'm going back to L.A., you know. So, you know, life goes on, and not realizing that when my son turned 18 and he was older and grown, that, you know, my parents would be getting older, too. You know. So, anyways, get back with baby daddy, we give it a shot, you know. We give it our best shot. And we got married. We probably dated for a year. We got married, and you know, everything was good. I had gotten a regular job. I think I got busted here. I got an 11-550, and when my son was real little, went through a program. First time I got introduced to these rooms, actually in the other fellowship, but I would go to both. And I was like, I can remember sitting down. I remember it was over there by the DMV. And I can remember sitting down there, and I remember the first time that I said that I was an alcoholic, and I just bawled. You know, I just bawled. Not knowing exactly what that meant at the time, you know. And so I do that program, put a little time together. I think I was almost done with the program, and this is how my brain works, you know. I go out, I have a few beers, they're not testing me as much. It's getting towards the end of that program, and I start having some drinks. Next thing I know, I'm in the bathroom. And I just snort a line. I'm only testing one day a week, you know. It's the next day that I got a test, you know. Who does that, you know? Really. So I went in there. I'm like, I'm dirty, you know, whatever. So I went, you know, had to do a little clean out or whatever in Santa Barbara. And then, like I said, then I got married. And I had gotten a job at the end of that program. I went through a program, and I was doing medical assisting at the time, and then my friend says, hey, I've got this job for you, you know, I know you'll be really good at it, you know, come work with us. Okay, and this is when computers are just coming out, you know, and I'm like, one finger, you know, typing, I have no idea what I'm doing, but that job would later help me build some skills that would help me get into my career. And I was married, and we had our son. We're raising our son, and we're going on vacations, and we're camping, and he's, you know, throwing him birthday parties like I grew up doing, and then I'm drinking here and there, and then he's using, and I didn't know, And then I start drinking. He doesn't come home a lot. And so I'd be home a lot with my son, and I'm drinking pretty heavily, you know. I'm probably up to about 3 bottles of wine a night. But I'm justifying the hell out of that, because you know what? I work a full-time job. I'm a PTA mom. I'm doing the homework. I'm doing the dinner. Well, most of the time. There was a few times when it was like, pasta, you know, freaking on the ground, you know, and that was dinner, you know. But, you know, besides that, you know, I'm pretty much holding it together, you know. Nobody needs to know that I have vodka in my drink at the PTA meeting, you know, so what, you know. And so then that relationship, because the only example that I had of a relationship with a man was that was 7 years older than me was this abusive relationship, that one where I moved in when I was 16. That was my example. We were together for almost 3 years. And so I start becoming the abuser in this marriage. And, you know, cops are getting called. Well, you know, who's going to go? You know, the quiet, you know, meth user or the loudmouth alcoholic. Well, all right. So, you know, so I go do some anger management and stuff. And then, you know, I was just, I was done. So I left, you know, I left that marriage and continued to drink. I moved back in with my parents. I take my son with me, our son. And, I'm drinking round the clock, you know. I'm peeing the bed. I'm reeking like alcohol going to work. My boss knows I'm freaking a drunk, you know. He knows it, and he's like, you might want to go home and take a shower on your lunch, you know. And I'm like, all right. He's like, you know, he's all, you know, Shelly, when you're on, nobody can hold a candle to you. But when you're not, yeah, you know. And I could be, and I wasn't nice. I was not nice when I drank at the end. So about, I don't know, maybe 6 months after I left my marriage, I got a DUI. And I've been drinking all day, and they picked me up about 11 o'clock at night, and that was it, you know. That was the first introduction that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came in, and I didn't want to be here. I was miserable. I can remember just being sick all the time, being hungover, just, you know, it's just my head's pounding. I'm sick all the time. I'm sleeping. I'm taking, you know, Xanax to get rid of the anxiety from the hangover. You know, it's just snowballing on me. But I don't know anything else. You know, I can go do work, but I don't know how to have relationships with people. And so I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get a sponsor. And I think I had gotten a sponsor too through that program. And I think I worked my steps, but you know what? That was just like a total blur. Like I just did like a speed run through this place, you know. And that was it, and I was off and running. And this time coming in, you know, I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps, and I started looking at my powerlessness and how unmanageable. There was no doubt that my life was unmanageable, for sure. Yeah, that was, I hated it, you know. I was like, alcohol was my best friend, you know. It was my best friend. You know, it always got me through everything. It didn't matter. You know, I didn't have to feel anything, or, you know, and I started to get these feelings, and I'm like, man, I don't know how I'm going to go to the lake. I don't know how I'm going to barbecue, because everything that I did, you know, I was surrounded by alcohol. If we were going to dinner, at that place better have a bar, because otherwise, while they're taking me to dinner, you know, because I'm probably having a couple while I'm getting ready, you know. So everything was surrounded by alcohol that I did, and so I started doing the deal, and I started getting involved, and I worked the steps, and I get a sponsor, and I'm coming to meetings, and I'm being of service, and I start actually having a good time, you know. I'm going to Halloween parties, you know, and then I start getting restless again, you know. I was just squirrely, and I had a commitment, and I was going to Vegas, and I said, I went to Vegas, and it was Cinco de Mayo, and I had one beer, and I didn't tell anybody when I came back, and I had 22 months sober, and I couldn't get rid of that meeting fast enough, you know. And then I planned the drink. I was like, yeah, we're going to tear it up on, you know, 3 weeks down the road. We're going to tear it up. And we did. And it was a good time. We had a good time. I drank like a lady, you know. Nobody, you know, got punched in the face or anything like that. And, you know, we danced and, you know, So this went on for a little while. I think I was in my relapse for about a year at least, maybe even a little bit more. And then towards the end of my drinking, you know, I'm working an outside sales job, making my own schedule. I'm stopping at the bar on the way there. I'm stopping at the bar on the way back. I'm having beers. You know, I'm the maintenance guy's leaving his girlfriend at home and coming to my house and we can party, you know, and it's just, you know, a shit show. And then my best friend and I, you know, towards the end of my drinking, my best friend and I, we get together and we go out and we drink all day. And at the end of the night, lo and behold, you know, what happens, you know? Oh, hell no. Somebody grabs me. Oh, that was it, you know. That's just reaction, you know. This is what I do, you know. And I swung and we fought. And she got hurt that night. And, you know, I want to tell you that that was the last of my drinking, but it wasn't. And I'm emotional because she's here today. And we didn't speak. We didn't speak for 4 years after that. So then, you know, that's not the end of it, you know. So then I got, you know, then I'm, you know, in another dysfunctional relationship, you know. Another Mr. Wonderful. And it's nothing to do with Mr. Wonderful, you know, and I'll find out later, you know, it has everything to do with Mrs. Wonderful. So, yeah.
Finally.
Right? So anyways, my last drunk, I go through the brick wall at my son's work backwards. And he says, Mom, I think you need to go back to those meetings. I said, I know I do. So I went back, and that was December 16th, 2012. And, you know, this time coming back, I knew enough about Alcoholics Anonymous and working those steps and uncovering some of that stuff that I didn't want to uncover. And then I start having some real feelings going on, you know. I'm crying all the time, you know. I'm sensitive. I'm the victim. It, you know, there was that husband, that whatever. I'm pointing fingers everywhere, you know. And then you know, with the patience of my sponsor, you know, this time I had to sit on step three, you know, because obviously I was powerless. And you know, I want to say that this time coming back in, I knew I was bankrupt, and I knew what bankrupt was. I knew I was spiritually bankrupt. I was beat up. There was no questioning it. There was nothing. You know, I had nothing left inside me, nothing. And I didn't have a spiritual life, and I was broken down. I felt like, I can remember coming back in this time, and I felt like a million pieces of glass shattered all over the floor. And it was like, wow, I got to clean this mess up. You know, I got to clean this mess up. So I start, you know, doing the things that kept me sober before, you know, and working those steps. And my sponsor had me sit on step three for a long time, because that's a big decision. It's a really big decision. You know, there's no sitting on the fence with that thing. There's not, you know. And then she tells me to find the first step in the big book. And I said, well, yeah, we already did the first step, you know. Shit. We're on third step, you know. And she's like, no, find it in there. It's in there. It took me forever. One day, my first sponsor, she goes, listen up in the meeting. And I heard it in the meeting. Until I could concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, I couldn't stay sober. All right. Now I got something to work with. You know, now I got something to work for. You know, and before I had reservations, you know. I was addicted not only to the alcohol, I was addicted to the lifestyle and the chaos and all that stuff, because I didn't know any better, you know. So then I would come in here, and then I had, then once I could come in this time and really start hearing all those, you know, little cliches, you know, oh, keep coming back, you know, and oh gosh, I don't even know, you know, but it's just like you just want to say, oh, my God, if they say that one more time, you know. But I had to become that person. I had to become that person. I had to deal with those feelings. I had to process them. I had to make that decision, and I had to turn my will and my life over to a care of God that I understood. And it that thankfully that wasn't hard for me because I did have a seed planted as a young child, but nothing like with the experience that I have today. So I work these steps, and I'm still, you know, the difference is I'm like, okay, don't look for the differences, look for the similarities, you know. I can really hear now because when I first came in, I couldn't hear anything, you know, everything's just wah, you know, and I can hear what you're saying, and I'm actually feeling it, you know, and that's a difference, and I'm like, well, I did all these things, I worked these steps. You know, but these steps have these principles attached to them that I never applied to my life. So I start applying those principles to my life, and my life starts to change. You know, just like it says in the book. You know, and there's many of messengers out there, and they may fail me, but that the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't fail me. You know, and I picked up the 12 and 12 today because it has been a while. And whenever I get stuck, you know, today, before Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no pausing before when I was agitated. There was no, keeping my big mouth shut was the hardest thing I ever had to do coming in here. And, you know, and people would tell me things like, man, I never heard, you know, in a women's meeting, you know, they told me to get to women's meetings and make friends with women because all my friends were men, you know. And I started to learn who I was, you know, and that I wasn't that person. I wasn't that bully. I wasn't all those things that I did, that I started to see that I started to meet myself here. I started to see that I'm a really good person, you know. And this didn't come overnight, and it comes and goes, and it comes and goes, you know, because I could, you know, I'm looking at Joseph, you know, and it's like, I don't know, God, was it 2 years ago or something? Anyways, I wanted to check out, you know. You know, I'm 3 years sober, and I'm ready to check out. And there's just times in that came up that, you know, I know what to do, but I wasn't doing them. And it's really simple. It's 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, you know. It's just like a little dance, you know. It's really simple, but I complicate the heck out of it. So I had to flip my perception back around, and I had to get to the root of the problem. And the problem, the issue was, it wasn't, it was just circumstances of my life that were affecting me. My mom's diagnosed with COPD, and she's really sick. And that woman sitting on the couch, that's not my mom. So I went back to school. I got into, you know, yeah, it's kind of come full circle, you know, because I said earlier I did medical assisting, and I started doing some caregiving to make up a part-time deal, make ends meet. And then my mom gets really sick. You know, and every day, you know, we're losing her, and so I'm mourning her for the last year. And I'm in school. It was finals. I mean, I think, my God, I think I had to put the family dog down. I mean, it was the week from freaking hell, let me tell you. And my sponsor comes over and says, no, you don't get to do that. And she put me on Front Street, and I had to get right with myself, and I had to remember that I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to God. So I had to turn everything that I had in me over. I had to turn my mom, who was, you know, going to pass, because that's what happens, you know. We age and we pass, and that's life, you know. And I had to turn her over to him. Turns out that would be the best thing I ever did, was turn that over to his care. He saw me through that whole experience like nothing I've ever experienced before. And that woman that ran the streets, that ran after me and did everything that she could because of Alcoholics Anonymous, was able to be there for her. And I held her as she took her last breath. What a bless. That was a blessing. I stayed with her in the hospital every night. And she knew it was okay to go. And I couldn't have done that without my higher power. He knew, all I know for me, that all he wants is my heart. And he knew that he had my heart. And he carried us. He carried us through that time. You know, I was going to take the semester off. I went back to school and I was going to take the semester off. And she passed. She passed on a Wednesday. School started on Monday. Then I wasn't signed up. And I knew, if you knew my mom, you know, she's a strong lady. You know, strong lady. Heart of gold. And I knew that that's what she would want for me, was to continue going. So as I made her collages for her services and everything, I went down and I signed up for school. And on that following Monday, I started school full semester. And I was able to put her to rest. I've since moved in with my dad, and you know, we're really close. My brother, you know, and I, we regained our relationship, my best friend, you know, but we didn't speak for 4 years, you know. I've been able to mend that relationship, and I know how to nurture those relationships today. I know how to be a caring person, and I know how to keep my mouth shut, and I know how to admit when I'm wrong, and I don't have a problem doing that, you know. But I couldn't have done any of these things. My list was long when I came in here, that if this happened or that happened, I would drink, you know. And God's timing for that, for my mom passing, couldn't have been any more perfect. And I don't know how, and I don't question it, but I'm really grateful today. I'm really grateful that that I'm sober. I'm really grateful, even more so, that I have a contentment in me, that I'm comfortable in my own skin, that I can be alone and be comfortable in my own skin, that I don't need to be Mrs. Wonderful. I don't need to be all those things. I just need to be me, you know. And I need to be kind. I need to be loving. And I don't have to do it perfectly. But I'm really grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, gave me my life back, you know, and brought me to my higher power, and vice versa. And that's how it works for me. So, yeah, I don't know. If you're new, keep coming back. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, you know. But for me, this program is priceless. It's priceless. Yeah. So if you just keep coming back. Thank you.
I want to thank our readers, Patrick. and Suzanne. Thank you. And then we want to thank our speaker, Shelley, for tonight. Another miracle. And for those that are here, miracles happen, and thank God each one of us here are miracles, one day at a time. I want to thank Christy for